The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
They drop the puck. Bruins win it. Horn sounds. Two Titans entered, and the Boston Bruins will leave with 2 points. The Bruins with another convincing win. 4-1 over the Tampa Bay Lightning. They end the month of February 11-0-2 and snap the Lightning's franchise record 10-game winning streak.
All right, welcome in here to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston, joined by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers, back from their Lewis and Clark-like expedition of the West. Haven't seen you guys in a while. Good to have you back.
It was a good trip. Good to be back.
Yeah, not too bad. You get 9 out of a possible 10 points on a 5-game road trip out West. You know, playing against some decent competition in some of those games too. We got a boatload of things to talk about this week with this team as the wins continue to pile up. Win over Tampa Bay the other night in impressive fashion in the third period. Win over San Jose as well since the team's been home, and now a matchup with New Jersey coming up tonight. We'll get to all of that. We'll get to the recap of the trade deadline and everything as well. Your calls welcome at 617-779-0985. Let's start with the Tampa Bay game, because, you know, for all of the talk about, you know, Tampa Bay was playing their third game in 4 nights and they're tired and, you know, their backup goaltender's in and all that. You know what? The Bruins are playing without their best scorer right now as well. It's not like everything, you know, is perfect for them. They went out and that game had all the feeling of a team that was trying to make a statement. That the Bruins came out and said, you know what, this isn't just another game, even a divisional game. Like, this is a game against a team that we very likely could see in the playoffs, and we need to prove that we can play on their level. And they put forth a hell of an effort, not just in that third period, but I really liked the way that they approached that game. And there was a little extra juice to it. From a player standpoint, it looked like they were really involved. And I think Brad Marchand kind of hinted at that after the game. He kind of joked about, it's just another game. It's like, no, this is a bigger than usual regular season game. And they played like
they did. It was, you know, and I would agree with that, Ryan, except for the fact that they've been playing hard every night. You know, I mean, it's, you know, look at the way they played against San Jose. Now, I don't think the Sharks were that good in that game, but some of it had to do with the way that the Bruins, you know, forced mm-hmm. them into errors and forced them into turnovers. You know, you had a crazy game last week or a week and a half ago against San Jose, same way. I mean, but it's been the work ethic that has stood out to me the most. And they, you know, every night, every shift, it seems like, you know, someone is bringing it. The energy's there. And I agree that, okay, you're playing Tampa, first place in the league, you know, team that you potentially could face in the playoffs, and you wanted to have a really strong game, and so the work ethic continued, you know, but it stood out more because it was against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So they have brought that, the identity of this team now. Look at the way that they've defended here recently. You know, you look at some of the goals against that have been way down recently, aside from maybe that San Jose game in San Jose, where it got a little loose. There haven't been a lot of goals against, so structured defensively, they're healthy on defense for the most part. Kevin Miller's a little dinged up. And, you know, up front, just the work ethic is what stands out to me. It's night in, night out, you know you're going to get that work. And then you sprinkle in some of the secondary scoring we've been talking about, some of the guys that have caught fire here recently, some of the younger guys who maybe didn't have it going early in the season and now have it going, you know, all that kind of coming together. Even without Pastrnak, they've been able to maintain this level. And it's because they become a very hard team to play against.
I think one of the things that we had talked about right on the heels of that victory over the Lightning was that it was a complete team effort. You got a contribution from everybody up and down your lineup. And this was also your first look playing a team like Tampa Bay that is deep, especially up front, you know, and they're deep on the back end as well. But that's a complete group. But now you're looking at them with a full complement, with Marcus Johansson playing on the right side with David Krejci, with a guy like Charlie Coyle to equip that third line. And it's a different look. to be able to throw out four lines like that. And the other thing that Bob and I had talked about when we took a deep dive on the Lightning in the first intermission, one of the things that separates the Lightning is not only the top-end talent, but it's how good that bottom six is. The Bruins' bottom six was equally good, if not better, than the Lightning the other night.
No, they all played them. The bottom six did, I think. I mean, that's the work ethic that I was kind of talking about, you know, and especially the fourth line. You know, you get that every night. And Bruce Cassidy starts that line more often than not. And a lot of times they'll start, you know, periods as well. So now you're going to be without Corrali. You're going to change things around a little bit tonight because of an injury. But, you know, that line is, you feed off of that energy that you get. And that Tampa Bay team, that was their, I know that was the backup goalie who played unbelievable, by the way.
Yeah,
he's
did.
The only reason that game was that close. But that's their full lineup. They're rotating defensemen. Girardi didn't play because he played the night before. Callahan didn't play. He played the night before. So they've got, my point is, everybody's healthy for them.
Right.
So they're rotating some guys in and out of the lineup, you know, on back-to-back nights or different, you know, nights, different games. But that is their team. You know, so, you know, that they're not missing guys. They're not missing guys because of injury. You know, they're fully healthy right now. So that's what you're going to see. You know, other than you'll see Girardi and Callahan in the playoffs, but that's what you're going to see.
The other thing the Bruins, I thought, did a great job of is they played a hard game. It wasn't necessarily overly physical. They didn't run the Lightning through the boards, but they played a hard physical game. If the Lightning tried to collapse at the front of the net, they were going to meet some physical confrontation. If the Bruins had the puck, they were going to force Tampa Bay to make a play to try and get it off of them. And I think that overall is something that the Lightning struggle with, playing against teams that play a hard game for 60 minutes.
I want to go back to the point that Bob made at the beginning there, talking about this team being difficult to play against, because there have been times over the past, you know, few years, not as much last year, but over the past few years, where we've gotten even to this point in the season and we look around and say, like, what is the identity of this team? Like, who are they? What do they do really well? What, you know, are they a difficult team to play against? And oftentimes the answer was no. I mean, it didn't feel like they had that kind of consistent effort from night to night to night. And that's why, you know, during this stretch, it's not just compiling points and helping yourself in the standings. It truly feels like this is rounding into a team that is now going to be a legitimate contender in the Eastern Conference and for a Stanley Cup. It's not just about, you know, being able to win some games here or there. It's like when you get into a 7-game series, can you do all the things that you need to do to be successful in playoff hockey? And we're seeing that from this team right now.
I don't think the identity of the team has necessarily changed. In fact, if anything, it was galvanized while the team was missing so many players. Then you had those defensemen come back, but essentially it was, okay, we're a team that defends well. We're a team that focuses, if we can, not spending a whole lot of time in our own zone, to be able to transition. We're a team that, you know, that is adept on the power play, being able to cash in. Now, some of that has started to change as some of the secondary scoring and guys beyond that top line and guys beyond the man advantage have started to score on a consistent basis. But I think the bedrock of the team really hasn't changed over the last 2 years.
All right. We'll get to your calls coming up here at 617-779-0985. Before we do that, guys, trade deadline came and went on Monday. The Bruins had already made the Charlie Coyle deal when we had the show last week, but they make a move for Marcus Johansson on Monday, bring him in here. What do you think? I mean, there were a lot of calls. I mean, we talked about it all year long leading up to the trade deadline. There was a lot of calls for, we need a third line center on this team. We need a, you know, a top six winger on this team. Did they do enough to be able to compete for a Stanley Cup?
I'd be lying to you if I said that, you know, I was disappointed that Mark Stone didn't end up in a Bruins uniform.
I think we all were.
Right? I mean, that's the home run, right? But I think that, but I also get it. I understand, you know, that he wanted to go to Vegas. The deal was good in Vegas, and he got his nice contract extension there. So, I mean, you know, that was going to happen. That put them in the driver's seat anyhow. So, for a number of reasons. But I right now, yeah, you had those two needs. as you said, the third line center and a winger, a top six winger. And I don't think those roles are necessarily defined just yet. They're still trying to find the right combinations. You know, it's interesting to watch Krejci and Johansson play together. You know, they like to dish the puck. You know, that two-on-one they had the other night, I was laughing. I said, who's going to end up shooting this puck? And it had to be a perfect play. It was actually a really good play, and it was a good play by, I think it was Sergachev on defense, just to get a piece of that pass, because it would have been a nice tic-tac-toe goal for them, or a nice give-and-go goal for them. But they've shown they want to pass a lot. And, you know, Jake DeBrusk, you know, he said it best the other day. It's good to be me because I got two guys that like to pass the puck, and the two guys that are pretty good at it. Now, whether that line stays together or not, we don't know. I mean, Coyle looked good at center against Tampa Bay, protecting the puck down low, taking the puck strong to the net. You know, that's what you kind of expect from him. You know, how he evolves as that third line center still remains to be seen. You're down to, what, 18, 19 games to go, whatever it is. So you get a decent look at it, but you might see him a little bit on wing. You might see Johansson play maybe wing with Coyle on that line. There's a lot of moving parts right now to find out what the best fit is. You know, when Pastrnak comes back, what's his playing ability like? You know, it wasn't the most optimistic of news. You know,
right.
He's going to be in a cast for 2 more weeks, and then he's going to wear a splint. And, you know, how's that going to affect him? So there's still a lot of moving parts, I think, up front for the Bruins.
It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. And look, if nothing else, they've given themselves more of what they already had, which was flexibility up and down the lineup and being able to move guys around. But they definitely added to their level of talent and their depth. And that's something that, look, it needed to be done. I mean, we've seen some guys in this lineup throughout the course of the year who haven't been consistent, who haven't been able to fill the roles that they had hoped, and we know that Johansson can do that. We know that Coyle can do that, and so now it's a question of finding the right spot for each of those guys.
Well, I think if you look at the Atlantic Division, I think one of the things, if you're going to come out in this current playoff format, which I don't like whatsoever, if you're going to play in this playoff format, you're going to have to be able to match up down the middle. Now, Nazem Kadri right now is hurt for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but if you look at them down the middle, very deep. Same with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't like Steven Stamkos in the middle. I still think he's a winger. I think that's actually the weak link with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But you've got Stamkos, Braden Point, who's a fabulous player, Anthony Cirelli down the middle. So you've got three guys. How do you match up to be able to go against those teams, to be able to play at least three or get that four-line rotation so you can have the best chance of winning? And I think the Bruins are in a much better position with Charlie Coyle there in the middle manning that line.
All right, your call's coming up next as we get started here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is where Boston talks hockey. 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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
to join us here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, all in studio this week. Let's open things up with Maria in Watertown up first. Hey, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. I just have a quick rhetorical question. Could you explain to me why a woman as relatively smart as I am left the beautiful weather in Sarasota to come back here to this mess? But as critical as I've been of Don Sweeney and his inability to make moves at the end of last season, and when I first heard about these trades, my initial reaction was, okay, these seem like okay guys, but I have to give him credit for the deals that he made, because it seems like it's re-energized this team, and they seemingly are playing with more of a purpose than they have in the past. And I think it's going to be an interesting and fun playoff run for this team. And then one quick question is, how did the referees miss that high stick on David Krejci the other night? The guy is leaking all over the place, going to the bench. That should have been a 4-minute power play for the Bruins. And I simply don't understand how that happens. And it can't happen on a play like that. That was clearly a high stick. Thanks for the time, guys, and hope you have a wonderful day.
I appreciate the call, Maria. I mean, as she brought up these, you know, the moves that they did make, at least in the early stages, certainly seem to have paid off, and we'll see how it plays out. But now you guys had a chance to see Coyle and Johansson in a Bruins uniform here a little bit. What do you think of their games? What do you like about them? You know, as we were talking about, it's going to be a kind of a mix and match here and see where exactly their best fit might be. But what does each guy really bring to the table?
Well, with Coyle, it's matchup, right? So right now they got him at third line center. And when he plays like he did against Tampa Bay, that's a tough matchup, you know, for some of the, from sort of the, some of the lower lines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a big, strong body. He's playing alongside David Back. He's played with Nordstrom the other day. You know, there's little size and little speed on that line. Nordstrom's not a small guy either, but a little size and speed on that line. And I think Coyle brings a combination of both. He was more effective against Tampa than he was maybe in his home debut. He was good against St. Louis. He was good against Tampa, where he really stood out. We're protecting the puck. You can see, you know, him being able to make plays. He cut to the net against Tampa, coming down the left wing side, you know, dropped the shoulder, got a little speed going, came right to the front of the net. You know, he's drawn a couple of penalties. He's effective. He stands out. And I thought he stood out against Tampa. That's a good sign. I mean, you got a guy, you know, like that stands out against a team that you may potentially play here down the line. And then when you compare Johansson, you know, a different player, playmaker, guy that seems like he thinks the game extremely well. He's been involved on the offensive side of things. Doesn't look like he hurts you defensively. You know, I haven't seen a lot of that. I mean, there's always some adjustments to be made. Adjustments Coyle-wise, by the way, defensively. You know, it's a man-to-man in Minnesota. It's a little different here, so he's got to kind of figure that out, and he's doing that. But, yeah, with Johansson, they have options. You can play him at center. You can play him at left wing. He's been playing right wing with David Krejci. So he can play all three forward positions, and you've got that flexibility to put guys in different places, and that's up to Bruce Cassidy now to figure out and his staff to figure out, you know, where these guys best fit. And like I said, moving forward, you're not going to have Pastrnak here for at least a couple more weeks. And when he comes back, you still have to try to figure out where everybody fits best. So it's a good problem to have right now, to have that flexibility and have the guys being able to play in different places. And, you know, the way it starts in a game, the way it starts, you know, in a period may not be the way it finishes.
Just to add on to that, for Charlie, he's only going to play faster once he gets more accustomed to the system. And Bruce Cassidy's mentioned in the past, centers for him and his system take on the biggest responsibility because of the amount of ice that they have to be able to cover. But the faster that he's able to digest that system, the faster he's going to be able to play on the ice. For a guy like Marcus Johansson, he mentioned the other day how much in many ways David Krejci, even though one's right-handed, one's left-handed, how there are a lot of similarities. You know, and you can put skilled guys together or guys that you think match up and the chemistry isn't there or the mix just isn't right. There was a big smile when he talked about the opportunity to get a chance to play with a guy like David Krejci. But the other thing that we had talked about was, okay, someone's going to have to shoot the puck here. And he said, actually, over the last couple of years, I've tried to shoot the puck a little bit more. And ultimately, he said, for me, it's trying to make the right decision at the right time. And sometimes that's to shoot the puck.
Well,
Johansson's going to help him, too, on the power play a little bit. And we haven't seen that yet. He's only been in two games. We had a small sample of it in the first game where he started to make some plays down on that right side. You may see them juggle the power play units just a bit. You know, he was a big part of Washington's dynamic power play a couple of years ago. And he played a lot down low, like net front, and then he would kind of pop off and be that guy down at the goal line. And he's got the ability to make passes. So you had Backstrom over on the, if I'm not mistaken, you had Backstrom over on the half wall. You had Johansson down around the goal line. You had like Troy Brouwer or Oshie. I think it was Brouwer right in the slot area. And then, you had Ovechkin over in the left wing circle. And there's a lot of different little options there. So then when they would go down to Johansson, he could make that backdoor pass over to Ovechkin. He could make the pass out to the bumper and Brouwer for the quick one-timer. So there are a lot of different little things, little plays that they made. And he was effective in that role. So where he plays still remains to be seen on the power play for the Bruins. There's only been a couple of games, and he hasn't had a lot of reps at it. But you may see some changing of the units, maybe, you know, when he really gets comfortable and going.
And in the bigger picture, I think for the man advantage for the Bruins, the first unit has been so dynamic all season long. If you're able to deepen that power play overall, so you have two units that are a threat, if for some reason that first unit is having a hard time executing, or maybe the penalty killers have the upper hand, if you have that secondary threat on a second unit, that's only going to help the Bruins.
Just to go along with the point about the flexibility that Johansson brings, being able to play all three positions, as you get down the stretch here and go into the playoffs, you're going to lose people generally along the way. Somebody's going to get hurt. that helps Bruce Cassidy help to fill in that lineup. If you've got a guy who can play all three positions, you know, he becomes invaluable to you potentially. If you lose a center for a game or two, he can fill in there. If you lose a right or a left wing, you don't have to, you know, necessarily scramble to bring in a guy from Providence or whatever, because you might have a guy who can fill that spot already on your already on the roster. Let's go to Ryan. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Great. It's always great to hear good hockey talk on Saturday morning. So the reason I call was the other night against Tampa Bay, a couple things popped out. The gap control defensively through the neutral zone was fantastic and never let Tampa Bay, although they might have been tired, but doesn't really matter, didn't really let them get their speed through the neutral zone to attack in the offensive zone. So I thought Bruce Cassidy and his crew did a great job game planning in regards to keeping the gap control in the neutral zone fantastic. And with that, I think Brandon Carlo has really stepped up his game. Years past, he looked like he was a little tentative, trying to figure out where he slotted in the whole top four, top six deal. But I think after last year, he really picked it up toward the end of the year, and he had that bad injury. And I think now he's really hit the next level where I think he's a top two, top three defenseman, at least in my opinion. And he's really taken it to the next level, pushing the puck up and joining the play offensively. And I think for the Bruins, if you get another big guy like that back there who's really come into his own, it's going to be fantastic with McAvoy, Brandon Carlo, and Kevin Miller, and of course, Zdeno Chara. They limit his ice time and don't let him tire out. But great time of year to be a Boston Bruins fan, getting ready for the playoffs and making a long run. So thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate the call, Ryan. We've talked about Carlo a fair amount this year, about the step forward that he's taken in his career this season. And I think we're seeing some of that out of Charlie McAvoy lately too, that, you know, he's had injury issues, he's had all these things that have kept him off the ice, but he's now looking more comfortable as well from game to game, and has been a lot more consistent lately.
Yeah, the health on the back end. I mean, for Carlo, look, first year he played with Chara, he was a shutdown guy, played extremely well. Second year they move him away from Chara, he has a little trouble in his sophomore season. Third year now he's in. He's not with Jari, but he's still in that shutdown role, and I think he's accepted that a little bit more. Like, okay, you know, I can be really effective being hard on guys, being hard in the corner, being hard in the front of the net, and jump up into the play when you can. I'm not crazy about him leading a rush, you know, carrying the puck up the ice. I want him to dish it and move and then join the rush. You know, I think he's much more effective that way than carrying the puck. So, but he's been good. He's been good. He's had a really good season, And it's good to see him bounce back, and the confidence seems to be there. How about the shot he blocked the other night, the Stamkos? He took that off the kind of the wrist the left hand there. So hopefully, you know, there's no effects from that. It didn't sound like it after the game. Everything seemed to be fine. But, yeah, he's really come into his own. Really have liked the way that he's played this year. They like the way he's played this year. He starts every penalty kill. You know, he's out there, and that's been his role. And the points, they'll come. Don't worry about them. Just do this job and do it really well. And then we'll worry about the points later. And I think he's accepted that, or at least it seems like it. And he's played with confidence this year.
I think when it comes to certain players, you get an illustration of when they're playing, who they're playing against, and how much they're playing to give you an idea of what the coaches think of that player. Brandon Carlo led the Bruins in ice time the other night against the Tampa Bay Lightning. He played just over 22 minutes. He was a +3 in that game. Part of me wants to just put him in bubble wrap just to make sure that he's ready
for the
playoffs.
He's not played a playoff game yet.
No.
He has not played a playoff game. He got hurt just before the Ottawa series 2 years ago. He got hurt just before the Toronto series last year.
And he's going to make a fundamental difference if he's healthy and ready to go for the Bruins in the playoffs, because that creates such a difficult matchup for other teams to be able to try and contend with in a guy like Brandon Carlo. But I think it's been, since you mentioned the word comfort, he's more comfortable with the puck. He doesn't necessarily have to make plays or, as Bob alluded to, lead the rush, make the first pass, exit the zone, be a part of the five-man attack if it presents itself. But I think the other thing is that he is playing with more conviction, whether it's in his own zone, in front of his net, or when he has the opportunities up the ice.
And I'm noticing that people are starting to take notice of Carlo and his play. Look, he's not going to blow you off the – statistically, obviously, he's not going to blow you off the score sheet. You know, he's not going to jump out at you. But when he did take that shot off the arm the other night and he goes up the tunnel – there was a little bit of a sense of panic among the fans, like, oh no, you know, please, we can't afford to lose this guy. And so people are starting to take notice of the impact that he's having on this team defensively, as well as being able to move the puck. 617-779-0985. We got Judd and Bob in the studio here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll talk with Joe Haggerty for a bit coming up next, right after Sports Hub headlines.
Press the right pants in. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And now we check in with NBC Sports Boston's Joe Haggerty joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline this morning. Morning, Hags.
Good morning. How's it going?
Good. A lot of us obviously had some high expectations going into the trade deadline last week. You know, the Bruins didn't make the big splashy move, but did they make the right moves?
That remains to be seen, right? We'll see how it plays out over the next couple of months. But they certainly upgraded, and that's the name of the game at the end of the day at the trade deadline, is to get better as a team. And, you know, you could see against Tampa Bay, part of the game plan is just fast-paced, roll the lines, take advantage of a team that's tired and, you know, doesn't have their great skating legs because of the games that they've played and the travel and everything else. And, you know, the addition of Charlie Coyle as the center on that third line and Marcus Johansson on the second line allows you to do that and really put the pressure on the team in that kind of situation. So, you know, obviously Coyle really hasn't gotten the offense going as of yet. Johansson looks really good with some instant chemistry with David Krejci and Jake DeBrusk. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out and if he can stay healthy over the remainder of the season. But, you know, clearly when watching this team, they're definitely better now with those two players. My only question and reservation and what I said at the time of the deadline when they brought those players in is, you know, are these two going to be enough to get you over the top to beat a Tampa Bay team in the playoffs when they're rested, when they're playing their number one goalie, when they're at their best too? And, you know, we'll see. I'm not sure that that's going to be the case, but certainly they got better, and that's a credit to Don Sweeney for going out and at least getting those moves and not taking anybody off the roster in order to do it, which I think was a priority for this team, as well as not giving up a first-round pick, not giving up any of their top prospects. To upgrade your team while not sacrificing any of that, I think, is a good thing.
Well, without overreacting, as some of us tend to do, to one game, I mean, the Tampa Bay game, obviously there's some, you know, some yeah buts in there, but right. you come out of that game and, you know, the Bruins are on this 15 game point streak and they're just piling up wins here over the course of the last month and a half. You know, it's much bigger than that one game when I ask you this question, which is, they're a legitimate cup contender right now, aren't they?
They are. They're legit. You have to think that. You have to believe that. I mean, look, you can mitigate some of the stuff from that win, as you said, you know, by taking into account that Tampa wasn't at their best because it was the third game in four nights and, you know, they were playing their backup goalie, Demay, who played extremely well, but still, you know, you weren't playing Tampa at their absolute very best. But, you know, the Bruins are playing some of the best hockey of anybody in the NHL right now, if not the best hockey. And this has been going on for a long period of time. It's been going on for over a month. It's been going on without their best goal scorer and best offensive player, their biggest game breaker in David Pastrnak. And really, everything is coming together for them as a team, whether it's the goaltending, whether it's the defense, and Charlie McAvoy really, you know, coming into his own and getting back to what was so exciting about his game in the last few weeks, months. And, you know, Danton Heinen and Jake DeBrusk playing extremely well. And DeBrusk, I really give, you know, credit, a lot of credit to him for helping offset that loss to Pastrnak with, you know, the 7 goals and 12 points in the last 8 games. He's been fantastic and red hot and as good now as he was cold for like that month and a half when he went without a stretch, without a goal. So, you know, you put all that stuff together and they are looking like a legit contender and one of the best teams in the NHL. The only issue with any of that is just the path that they're going to have to take in order to get all the way to the Stanley Cup final and to win is going to be as difficult as anybody else in the NHL based on who they're probably going to have to play in the first couple of rounds, you know, and how tough that road is going to be. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, and Torrey Krug said as much the other day before that game against the Lightning. They know that any road to the Stanley Cup final is going to have to go through Tampa Bay. They played like that the other night, and they're going to have to play like that in the final couple of matchups against that team that they still have in the remainder of the season and finish up strong. You know, the one concern, the one sort of thing you would put on this streak that they're in right now and the way that they're playing right now is, and you hate to be a Debbie Downer about this, but, you know, this is a classic hockey thing that does happen sometimes, is you do wonder if they're peaking too soon, and that's a little bit of a concern to say they're playing so good right now. Are they going to be able to sustain this for the rest of the season and then into the playoffs and play at this level the entire way through? You would think so because they've been doing it for so long. But you hope you don't look back after the season's over and say, wow, they were on that stretch in February and March, and you know, once it hit playoffs, they weren't quite at that level, and it cost them at that point. We'll see how it plays out, but, you know, there's always that little thing in the back of your mind when a team's going through a stretch like this around the trade deadline as to whether they're going to keep playing this way once the playoffs start.
But, Joe, let me ask you a question. What are the Bruins supposed to do, not win these games?
No, Jeff, there's nothing you can do, right? I mean, it's just the way the season's going to play out. I absolutely agree. You know, but you know, you've been around hockey as long as I have. You've seen plenty of these instances where a team rips off a winning streak like this during the regular season, and then, you know, they're not able to keep that going in the playoffs. Now, the one thing that's even more of an example of that is Tampa Bay is so far out in front of everybody else, they're really going to probably be caught napping at the beginning of the playoffs. They're so good, they're probably going to be able to overcome it. But, like, they're so far in front of everybody else right now, it's going to, I think, be difficult for them to get that engine revved and going once the postseason starts. You would think, because the Bruins are still playing for home ice and there's going to be some things they're competing for down the stretch, that they're going to still be playing hard, and that's going to be a benefit to them. But, you know, when you see, like, them doing something they've only done three times in the last 50 years during the regular season, it tells you this team is legit, they're extremely good, and they're a cup contender. But it also makes you wonder, is this as good as it's going to get this season? And we'll see how it goes in the end.
So much of what we've talked about this year, Hags, is, you know, as far as improving this team, has been about finding scoring depth. I mean, there's been stretches of this year where the Bergeron line was scoring, and that was about it.
Yep.
You know, Pasternak goes out, and now, as you mentioned, like, you know, DeBrusk comes alive, and Heinen has been a lot better, and the fourth line is chipping in, and now you've got, you add Coyle and Johansson, and, you know, the third line is, you know, is giving you quality minutes now on a regular basis, and it feels like that depth that has been a question mark all year long, that question mark is starting to get erased finally, and that this team feels like almost like a Bruins team from around the Cup era, in that they're now able to throw four lines at a team like Tampa Bay, and they can go toe-to-toe with the best teams in the league because of that.
Yeah, they have the depth to be able to do that, and that was, you know, a big part of getting Charlie Coyle to stabilize and drive that third line, was to be able to create matchup problems against teams that don't have the depth that you're going to have, and also be able to hang with the best teams that have that depth among their forwards that you really didn't have all season long, when Bruce Cassidy, who's done a phenomenal job this year, by the way, you know, was mixing and matching and tweaking and trying to find the combinations that were working, when, you know, Heinen and DeBrusk and other young guys, when Donato was here, weren't quite, you know, doing what they were hoping they were going to be able to do offensively as far as production goes. So there's no question they've got the depth they were looking for. All four lines are going to be able to get thrown out there and do the job. As I said before, it's going to be really nice when, you know, Coyle, Backes, whether it's Solarik or Nordstrom, whoever's on that third line, whether it becomes Heinen on that third line when Pasternak does come back, you know, when that line is also be able to kick in some goals and start producing offense as well, you know, that's when you're really, I think, going to see the true depth of the team and the attack and how difficult they are going to be able to stop. But, you know, just right now, the fact that they can put three lines out there, they can put offensive pressure against the other team, that, you know, are going to be able to play good two-way hockey. And, you know, you're going to have the confidence, if you're Bruce Cassidy, to throw them out there and play them equally and just roll lines and try to tire other teams out and, you know, put the pressure on them. Yeah, I mean, that's what hockey and being a good team that is cup worthy is all about. And the Bruins have that right now. They're playing so well right now. You just want them to maintain what they're doing, keep it going, stay healthy, wait for Pasternak to come back and see how good this team really can be and what the ceiling is once he gets back and he's healthy. Because, man, that is truly going to be a deep team when Pasternak comes back. If he goes on that top line and you start, forming the lines below that, I think you're going to be able to see teams that can play offense and defense with anybody in the league.
617-779-0985 is the number. Hags, we appreciate the time as always, and we will talk to you next week.
You got it.
All right. He joins us in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. We'll get to more of your calls coming up as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.5 The Sports Hub and the Hockey Show with you until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985. Let's go to Chris, who's been holding to talk to us. What's up, Chris?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey, a couple of observations. Just a quick. Do you guys see that Carey Price video that went on the internet?
Oh, yes.
My God. Was that something? Holy smokes. But now, that aside, that was an amazing thing. DeBrusk, I tell you, most guys have come playoff time another gear. You know, they tend to raise their level of play. This kid right now is playing with, like, two extra gears. He's the fastest guy on the ice by far. And it's just, boy, I hope he can keep this up into the playoffs. And Chara, he's not playing quite as slow. I guess that's my compliment to him. He's very steady back there when he's not painfully slow to watch. But other than that, there's absolutely nothing to complain about, guys. It's been great. They're playing awesome. Have a good morning.
All right. Appreciate the time. Some people still find some things to complain about.
Well, there's always going to be something you try to fix. There's always going to be something you want to be better at, right? I mean, so when I look at this team, though, moving forward, and it's great that they're getting the secondary scoring, and you still want to see that, and it's great that they're getting a little bit more 5-on-5 scoring, and you still want to see that, you know, and the energy's been there, the hard-to-play-against identity's been there. The structure defensively, though, to me, is key if they're going to have success. Because at some point, that scoring dries up. You know, when you're playing, you know, maybe it doesn't, but at some point, you expect it to dry up a little bit, and how are you going to play defensively? Second best defensive team in the league right now. Only the New York Islanders are better. Nobody thought we'd be saying that after last season, but they're right there in terms of the best defensive team in the league, and that has to stay steady. And that's, you know, from your goaltending right on out. The goaltending's been good. The defensive structure's been good. Somebody made a comment about how they stood up in the neutral zone. Yeah, there was no time and space for Tampa to do anything there. That's because the forwards track back hard. The D are able to step up or stay up. The gaps are good. And that's not just the Tampa game. That's been happening a lot lately. You know, maybe they get away with it or get away from it, you know, for a little period of time. And then they get right back to it. And if they're going to have – and I looked at February, under 2 goals against per game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's with, you know, five from San Jose. And, you know, somebody had 4 against them. I think it was the Kings. So – but – they had a couple shutouts during the month. Those are the type of games that you're going to, that's the type of game you have to win, you know, when the scoring does dry up and it becomes more difficult to score and more critical games. So that has to be there. That's been there most of the year. They've been in the top 5, you know, most of the year, if not higher, and they're number 2 right now. So I think that that's the strongest part of their game right now. And power play's been good at times, you know, the top line's been, you know, other things have shown up at different times, but the team defense, they got away from it a little bit in the middle of the season. Now they're back to it, and they're still one of the top teams.
Defense wins championships. Defense also travels. Defense is a mindset. That's certainly the case with the Boston Bruins. Since you mentioned the Islanders, that's certainly been the case with the Islanders because it hasn't been a big personnel change. It's, you know, Robin Leonard's had a great season, but it's not as though that he came in with all these Vezina trophies under his belt and is just backstopping this team to the best goals against in the National Hockey League. So I think that that's a part of the Bruins' fabric. But just
possession in the offensive zone—that's good defense. You know, you're not playing; you don't having to play defense, and they've been better at that. They've been better at being hard on pucks. They've been better at the forechecking game. You know, hemming teams into their own zone. You know, and when they're comfortable in their own end. You know, I think a lot of teams get running around a little bit in their own end, maybe because they play the man-to-man or whatever. But you don't see a lot of panic on the Bruins side of things. So when Tampa has a shift where they've got the puck in the offensive end a lot, you know, and you're a little bit tired, you're a little fatigued, you've been out there for a long time, there's not a lot of panic in their game. It's sorted out, keep things on the outside, circle the wagons a little bit. We're not chasing as much because our legs are heavy. So, you know, you just kind of contain, keep it on the outside, you know, wait for that mistake where we can clear the zone or we can get a cover from the goaltender. You know, it doesn't always work out, but there are going to be times where you get hemmed in your own zone. And are you able to, you know, be calm and sort it out and make sure that everybody's doing, you know, everybody's playing their, doing their jobs, right? Everybody's doing their jobs in their D zone. They're handing off guys, you know, depending on where players are. They don't chase. They're not, you know, getting defensemen chasing way out by the blue line. You know, they're very structured, very disciplined in their own end.
Bruins have the third best record in the National Hockey League. And they're still, even now, they're starting to get some complimentary scoring. And that has only been something recent. But they're right in the middle of the pack offensively. But think about that. That's how much defense can drive you as long as you have a good power play. You're able to chip in a few goals here or there. The way you play defensively will keep you in games all the time, and they are comfortable playing that style, and it's going to give them a chance to win from this point forward.
Well, if you go back, I think it was toward the beginning of this streak that they're on, there was a time that Bruce Cassidy called out his team's defense and said...
Yeah, because he knows he has to get back to it.
Well, and that was, you know, at that time, they weren't getting a lot of the secondary scoring, and you know, I and some other people looked at it and said, "Wait, really? You're going to call out the defense right now? Like, you need to score more goals." But that's part of it, right? I mean, it's part of being a good defensive team is it does create offense in the other direction. If you're playing against a team like Tampa Bay that's accustomed to scoring a lot of goals, and you're frustrating them, and they're not able to get going, turning the puck over, maybe trying to force things a little bit, that can open things up at the other end for you offensively.
Well, and I think that was also part of the issue. So, yes, he was very definitive in what he wanted, especially from his core players on the back end. But I think the other part was that he felt like some of the message didn't get across exactly the way that he wanted. He wanted a little bit more from his defense. Even Don Sweeney, when we had talked to him during the Winter Classic, he had wanted a little bit more from his defense to add at the offensive end, to join, to be part of a five-man attack. And maybe during that sequence when Bruce Cassidy had talked about his defense in particular, that maybe some of the message was, I do want more from you, but I don't want you to sacrifice what the identity of this team is about. So I think that some of that message got a little bit lost. I think he wanted to reinforce exactly what he wanted from his team, and they have bought in.
All right, we'll get to Sports Hub headlines here with Tim McCone and another hour of your thoughts coming up at 617-779-0985 as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub, hour number two of the hockey show. 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair's Tire Studios. Billy Jaffe will join us coming up in about a half hour. A lot going on around the NHL to talk about with him. Obviously, the reaction to some of the moves made at the trade deadline and where people landed. And
just want to talk about Ottawa.
Well, that's definitely on the list of things to talk about today. Coaching change in Ottawa, as that franchise continues to spiral downward, and it never stops.
They got to sign Chuck Barris because that's a gong show.
We've got there's a not to plug
my Twitter, but if you go to Johnston98.5, I retweeted this earlier this morning. There is somebody has put together a list of all of the things that have gone wrong in that organization since they lost the Eastern Conference Finals, and it is unbelievable. Unbelievable list. Right down to, you know, opening night, dropping like heavy beach balls onto the fans, knocking over people's beers and knocking kids to the ground. And I mean, just like they cannot get out of their own way.
How'd you like to be in the back office trying to sell season ticket packages or trying to sell sponsorships back there?
who are we putting on the ice next year?
That's one of the circles of hell in Dante's Inferno.
It really is fascinating. So we'll talk more about that with Billy coming up in the final half hour as well. But as it relates to the Bruins coming into this matchup against New Jersey today, obviously things have, right now are going as well as they possibly could. But at the same time, you are mixing in a couple of new faces here over the last couple of weeks, and that's always an interesting dynamic, but made even more so, and Bob, maybe you can speak to this, by Marcus Johansson and Brad Marchand have a history. Yeah. What's the dynamic like in that room when you bring in a guy who obviously was not a big fan of Brad Marchand because of their
who
past
is?
History? I mean, a lot of people around the league
who
are
is?
Not. Sure.
It's the thing where, okay, he's hated around the league, but 30 other teams would love to have him. And if he walked into a dressing room, he'd be welcome with open arms. Johansson didn't do anything wrong.
Sure.
So he's welcome into this locker room. It's all on him, as long as he's past it. And I don't see any problem whatsoever. It's different when, you know, the Bruins bring in Chris Nyland,
right?
You know, than the history that he had playing against the Bruins with the Canadiens, even though he's from Boston. But that was, you know, a hatred towards him, you know, when they played against him.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that work out just fine. So it's more on Johansson coming in. You know, he had the problem with Marchand, as most players in the league do, like I said. But as soon as you see he's on your team, you know, I think he said it best. I'd rather be playing with him than against him.
I think that's the general
that's exactly
feeling for
right.
a lot of
so,
people, right?
There's no problem whatsoever. There's no, you know, there's nothing. There's nothing there, and nor should there be. And, you know, unless he's got a lingering problem, and I don't see that happening at all. You know, you move on.
There are a lot of cases like
there's
that.
There's so many cases like that.
Chris Chelios
exactly.
going to Detroit. Yeah. He had pummeled Larry Murphy, grabbed him, and just smoked him at Chicago Stadium. They become teammates.
But again, that's the opposite. That's right. Him going to Detroit. Right. And, you know, it's a whole team having to welcome him in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is – nobody's got a beef with Johansson.
No, I
– So, you know, it's just – so it's on the flip side. And it's a non-story.
No, I just like yeah. it is, you know, it's something that gets brought up when, you know,
there's so many examples.
One of the
of
first
it over
reactions
the
to that. Yeah. And but it's something that these guys have to deal with when you change teams. If you're Marcus Johansson, you know, look, it gets addressed. Obviously, he said it and you said it. I'd rather have him on my team than against me because I don't have to worry.
Every
about
other
him
team in the league would say the same exact thing.
And the beauty of this sport is the honesty and the character that most guys, like 99% of them that they play with. And Marchand did it exactly the right way. As soon as he got acquired, he makes the phone call to Johansson. We're good.
Right. And look, ultimately, even if they're like, you don't have to be best friends, right? I mean, you're not going to be best friends with everybody in every locker room. You as long as you can play together and coexist, it really doesn't matter. But that was one of the first reactions that I think a lot of us had. It was you see Johansson coming in. It's like, oh, last time as Bruins fans, we remember much about Marcus Johansson was that incident. So how is that going to be handled? But it goes away very quickly, as it will here. All right. I asked Joe Haggerty the question when we had him on last hour about the Bruins as a cup contender. Coming out of the trade deadline, we agree that they've gotten better.
And I, you know, kind of, you know, talked about this a little bit at the beginning. Did they do enough? You just mentioned, Judd, a few minutes ago. Bruins have the third best record in the NHL. I think that gets lost on a lot of people. You're so far behind Tampa Bay in the standings that it doesn't feel like it, but you're one of the best teams record-wise.
Yeah, only Calgary.
In the NHL.
Tampa,
right?
Calgary, Boston.
So as you look at this team, and you know, we see them against Tampa the other night. We're going to see them against Tampa a couple more times this year. Do you guys have the feeling that this is a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, and you know the strengths that they have, and you know, and maybe a few of the weaknesses that they have? Do they match up against Tampa in a 7-game series? Can they, you know, is that a winnable series now for this team, assuming that that turns out to be the second round matchup down the road?
The answer is yes. The other two teams that are in front of them, you've beaten both of them. You beat the Calgary Flames at TD Garden. That came in early January, if memory serves. You just knocked off the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, and I think you're going to see Tampa twice more, especially the last one will also not be an indicator. You won't get an indicator until these teams meet in the playoffs. These are regular season games. They don't have any bearing on what you're going to see in the playoffs. But I don't have any reason to believe that the Bruins are anything but... are there enough double negatives in there? A Stanley Cup contender with their goaltending, the way they defend, the identity of the team, and now how deep they are as a four-liner.
If they maintain being a hard team to play against, being physical, winning battles, and being sound, structured defensively, you've got an opportunity there. You got to go through Toronto first. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Right.
All right. And Toronto's, you know, they're flawed, but they're good. And they've got the potential to be very good. So,
but a lot of what you just said about what the Tampa Bay series
formula.
Would be the
exactly.
way you beat Toronto, too.
How do you beat skill? Well, you got to be, you know, and some of the high-end skill that they have, you've got to be hard on them. And they had that formula earlier in the season, you know, in a game at the TD Garden against the Leafs. And Toronto went back, you know, and everything was, oh, we got to get tougher. Well, that was media-driven. But we got to get tougher. And they really... You know, they really didn't address that a whole lot. I mean, Jake Muzzin comes in. He's a pretty, you know, good minutes eater, good sound defenseman, can play that physical game as well, and a lot of experience in the playoffs. So, yeah, they added, but they I think a lot of people wanted them to add maybe something up front in that type of, you know, mindset, being a little bit harder. It doesn't matter who the Bruins are going to play against. That's the way they have to play if they're going to be successful. The skill will come, the goals will come, but they got to be sound defensively, really hard to play against, and that, you know, that will give skilled teams a hard time.
Listen, the Toronto Maple Leafs, they have some game breakers up front. Matthews, Marner, who was their best player in the playoffs, by, you know, no question, against the Bruins. Obviously, you got a guy like John Tavares. Freddie Anderson is having a good year. I think we can dispute whether or not we think he's a good playoff player. But their flaw may have been, it may have gotten larger. They've got some injuries now. Jake Gardner is down week to week with a back injury. You've got Travis Dermott, who is now week to week with a shoulder injury. And we've still got some time between now and when the playoffs start. But that is something that bears watching, even though they added a guy like Jake Muzzin. And I think that the call in Toronto was, as Bob talked about, should they have added somebody up front, somebody that can get to the interior of the ice. Who's going to be able to do that for the Toronto Maple Leafs when these two teams, it looks like they are ticketed toward meeting in the first round? Who's going to be able to do that? Who's going to play in the middle of the ice against the Boston Bruins at the offensive end? That's a big question.
617-779-0985. We can get to more of your calls next. It's Johnston, Surratt, and Beers here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. 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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show, 617-779-0985 is the number. We've got Bill up next here this morning. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I got a quick question here. When Pasternak comes back, do you see that Heinen stays on the Bergeron line? And also, I like the deals that the Bruins made. I think they got a little bit heavier, but with skill. And I think in order to get Tampa Bay, they started hitting Tampa Bay around a little bit in their own zone, creating a lot of turnovers and creating the offense from the turnovers. I don't know if you guys saw that or not, but I appreciate you guys' show. Keep up the great work, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, appreciate the call. Before we get to the lineup thing, this is something we talked about a little bit, I think, off air, but that Tampa Bay game, you know, so much gets made about, you know, oh, their third game in 4 days and yada, yada, yada. Piercy was saying, like we didn't just come
back from
really
California
long trip?
And Vegas and St. Louis and have to play San Jose the first game back. And I mean, you know, everybody's tired this time of year.
But even that, you know, it's one thing to beat a team like that. It's another thing to beat them the way that they were beat. Like
the Bruins controlled that game. They
controlled
the game right from the drop of the puck. I mean, I think the first shift, Kucherov had the puck in the offensive end and created a couple chances. Very first shift of the game. There were very few sustained attack, maybe until the third period. I counted one in the second period. Kucherov's line again. And he's the real deal. That guy's good. But it looked like they took away their will. You know, and then they started making mistakes. They started giving up, you know, pucks. And, you know, the Bruins just, they checked them. They checked them hard. And it wasn't, you know, running over people. It was just they were in their face all night. And they just didn't give them a lot. It was an impressive game that way. And they had the puck in the offensive end. They made Vasilevsky. If Vasilevsky doesn't stand on his head, so, okay, you play your backup goalie. Well, I can see that argument if he lets in eight. He played unbelievable. He had a pretty good nutty there, too, in the third, huh?
that stick never stood a chance.
Because he kept them in the game and gave them a chance, and his team never came around.
Yeah.
They kept making mistakes and because the Bruins kept forcing them into it. That was an impressive performance by the Bruins. It doesn't mean anything when the puck is dropped in the playoffs, no. But it was they've known for a long time how they have to play in order to win games. And they're doing it right now. They're doing it on a fairly regular basis.
Tampa tried to make a push early in the third period.
They did.
It was a one-shot game at the end of 40 minutes. They tried to make a push, and the Bruins pushed back. Noel Achari, rebound opportunity off of Chris Wagner's shot.
He had the steal, too.
Was broken.
He had the steal as well, and he took the puck off of Kucherov, I believe, along the wall. You know, he'd just gotten on the ice. The puck came around the boards of Kucherov. He won a battle along the boards. Moved it down to Wagner, went to the net, got the rebound.
Kucherov was frustrated, took a game misconduct right at the end of the game.
Yeah, he was giving it to the referees. And is that what they gave him? They gave him 10 or a game?
It must have been
a game misconduct. So he was just feeding it to the line. Remember the linesman kicked somebody out of the faceoff circle with 0.4 seconds to go in the offensive end in a 4-1 game?
Yeah.
So it was the linesman that called it because he was just giving it to the linesman. And, you know, so the frustration had set in. Well, it had been there for a while, but really boiled over the top. And the linesman skated over the referee, and he pointed at Kucherov, and the referee came over and made the call.
Does take.
After the buzzer.
Yeah, four-tenths of a second
left. By the way, on the nutty that Louis Domingue pulled, I talked with an NHLer walking out of the building, and he felt it was because Marchand chili-dipped his breakaway opportunity.
He did.
He didn't touch on it at all.
Could have been a number of things, but whatever. I'm sure it was a bunch of things combined.
Yeah. I mean, three goals in that short of a time span is going to get to
you. You don't see a goalie pull that nutty if a guy misfires on a shot and beats him. You see it when he's already stopped 40 shots, and that one is the one that, you know, is going to put the game away.
To the caller's original question about, you know, what do they do when Pasternak comes back? What, you know, this is a question we've in various forms had a lot over the course of this year. We talked about it early in the year when only the Bergeron line was scoring. It's like, well, do you break that up and do you, you know, give Krejci Pasternak to play with in an effort to try and get a little bit more balance in your lineup? Now you have balance in the lineup, and your best goal scorer is hopefully going to be back in a couple of weeks. So what do they do at that point?
Well, I'm less concerned about that because I think they have options. And some of it's going to depend on how Pasternak is, you know, how his thumb is. And, you know, top hand. Right, he's a right shot. It's his left hand, so it's top hand. So, you know, how that's going to affect him. But last season, that Bergeron line was dominant against the Leafs. Pastrnak in particular. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all were, but they did whatever they wanted against Toronto. Against Tampa, they did so in the first game, and then Braden Point kind of shut them down after that. His line did. I think that Bruce Cassidy is more, because he's got a lot of different options, I think the coaching staff will be more open to changing things up if a line's getting, if they're not producing the way that they had hoped, or, you know, that line's getting shut mm-hmm. down. They've got more depth, if, as long as everybody's healthy, to be able to do that. You know, you had some guys banged up last year. You're most likely going to have some guys banged up this year. So what's it going to look like? I think that'll have a lot to determine what the lines look like. And then, you know, how the games are going. He's changed things up a lot this season. And I see that continuing in the playoffs if something isn't going right.
And you want to be able to give the other team a different look.
Sure.
You know, when I think back to the playoffs last year, as much as we've talked about Rick Nash's injury, I think the injury to Riley Nash heading into the playoffs against the Toronto Maple Leafs altered the course for the Boston Bruins. They ultimately won that series in seven games, but Riley Nash was never the same player in the playoffs that he was during the regular season before he took the puck off the head. So if Charlie Coyle can establish himself and you've got a combination, whatever that may be, down on that third line that works, whether it's Coyle and Heinen, Coyle and Backes, Coyle and Johansson, any combination of the three, I think that that's going to matter a lot once you hit the playoffs, if you want to go deep.
We've seen over the last few weeks Danton Heinen's name on the score sheet a lot more in various capacities. How much of that is he's playing with Bergeron and Marchand on a nightly basis, and you're just going to collect points if you're in that spot, no matter who you are? And how much of that is a turnaround in his game and the way that he's been performing?
Well, I think he's been winning battles most of the season. He's not going to hurt you out there because he's pretty sound defensively. He wins a lot of pucks along the wall. As long as he's creating chances. Now you got some guys who are finishing it as well. You know, I mean, you know, let's face it, we were looking for some of that secondary scoring, and Heinen was all around the net, and he was creating chances, but sometimes the pucks weren't going in. You know, at some point, it's got to change for you. It has, and, you know, credit to him. He's continued to work at it. He's continued to – I'm sure he's frustrated. I'm sure he was frustrated for a while. You've always been able to put points up at every level, you know, and all of a sudden, it's not coming for you. That weighs heavily on a player. So, you know, he's played himself through it. He's hopefully come out the other end and be a better player for it. And, you know, I think DeBrus is probably a little streakier in that sense. But, you know, he's obviously playing at top of his game right now. Over 20 goals. He had 16 last year. Heinen had more points than DeBrus last year. Mm-hmm. You know, we forget that because Heinen faded a little bit towards the end, and DeBrus was playing more and playing bigger minutes and scoring bigger goals against Toronto. So those are, you know, for the Bruins, it just gives them more options, like we've said, up front. It gives them more versatility up front of what they can do. And Heinen can play both the right and the left side. He can play up and down your top nine. Right now, it's fit in nicely up, you know, with Bergeron and Marchand.
Only Bergeron and Marchand have a better plus-minus rating than Danton Heinen. He is a reliable defensive player.
He's only just recently played with him, so.
Right,
you know.
But Bergeron's talked about it in the past. He's got a good stick. He's usually in the right spot. He is a reliable 200-foot player. He's more of a setup guy. He does have a good shot.
He does have a good shot. I'd like to see him use it a little bit more.
We'll go to the middle of the ice, but he's been a guy who's set up a lot of, mostly Marchand here of late, but a little bit more of Bergeron as well. He had two helpers the other day.
If I'm not mistaken, I can't remember the exact game, Judd, but the Bruins, might have been their last loss, actually. Heinen had a puck on his stick that would have tied the game right in front. It was a pass from David Krejci, and it kind of bobbled off his stick. He wasn't able to get the shot away. And do you remember this play?
The Rangers.
I think it was the last time they lost.
Okay.
It was a pass to him in front. I'd have to look at that anyhow. And that puck went off his stick. He sat out the next game. And then after that, he was on the Bergeron line. If I'm not mistaken, I could have my games a little mixed up on it, but it was around that same time frame. And since then, he's been, you know, putting up the numbers.
And that's the only difference. I think, you know, he's started to find some finish. I think most of his points lately have been assists, but that's been the difference. Now that puck has been on his stick here in the last couple of weeks, and it's found the back of the net.
All right, we will talk with Billy Jaffe. We'll get some of the news from around the NHL with a trade deadline this past week, and the coaching change in Ottawa and all that. We have plenty to talk about with him, and we'll do that next. First, the Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show on a Saturday morning.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. And around this time each week, we go around the NHL and we welcome in Billy Jaffe of Nesson. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. What's going on, Billy?
Another day in hockey paradise. Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing today?
Doing well. Let's start with the trade deadline stuff from early on in the week. We kind of see how everything shakes out and who winds up where. Were you at all surprised by, you know, some of the bigger names and the prices that they fetched?
No, I mean, each year seems to have its own kind of, you know, personality. You know, everybody thought, and for a long time, for instance, a big name was Wayne Simmons, that he was going to get more in return than he actually did. I think that the Philadelphia Flyers overplayed their hand on that one. They kept waiting and waiting, and then they finally took the best offer that they got. And, you know, meanwhile, depending on who you ask, you know, Ottawa thinks they, you know, they were able to get the sun and the stars and the moon for Mark Stone. And then other people I've talked with said, well, they did well. And, you know, they got the pick, and they got the number one pick from last year from Vegas, the kid that played for the Chicago Wolves, Eric Brännström, the defenseman. And other people said, well, he's good, but is he an all-world superstar to be? No, he's just going to be a really good defenseman. So, you know, what I'm starting to learn, or at least take, Ryan and fellas, is, you know, each deal seems to be its own deal. You know, it's not always setting the market. Remember, everybody thought Brian Boyle set the market for a second-round pick? Well, there were other deals that happened that didn't get as much in return. Every deal has its own personality.
The big fish that we all agreed when you were on the show last week that we'd love to see in a Bruins uniform is Mark Stone. He winds up in Vegas and almost immediately agrees to a contract extension worth, what, about $9.5 million a year?
Yeah.
8-year contract. I mean, it took
move and a no trade.
And a no trade call, of course. Well, you got to throw that in there.
yes.
But it's, you know, we're going to talk about Ottawa here because they just changed their coach and the mess that organization is. Did it just come down to that he didn't want to be in Ottawa anymore? Was it as simple as that?
From everything that I'm told, yes, that's what it came down to. It came down to, yes, they made a hefty offer. That was the deal that he asked for. And Ottawa, if they weren't there, they were real close to it. So from what I'm told, and for what it's worth, that it just came down to when him and Ryan Dzingel, and obviously Duchesne, just said, you know what, it's time to move on, which I don't know if you guys, you know, Judd and Bob, felt the same way or not. I don't know why the heck you'd want to stay in Ottawa. I understand loyalty. I get it. But that is such a mess there that I couldn't see. I mean, you're 5 years away from being an average to good team, at least in my opinion. It's such a mess.
Yeah.
And why would he hang around that long? So he got himself into the right spot.
Yeah, you know what? There's so many layers to Ottawa. Their prospects look really good, right? I mean, here's the argument from the fans right now. So what if the prospects look good? Because when they become unrestricted free agents, they're going to leave anyhow.
Right.
It's like, we're only going to have them for a few years. So,
right.
You know, it's that bad up there right now, and it's just so toxic. And, I mean, the arena deal just fell apart. I mean, you were saying, Ryan, somebody wrote an article on how many bad things that have happened to them. I mean, when was the last time you heard good news come out of this? It's been 2 years.
Yeah.
They need to change ownership. They need to change ownership. We've seen it in other markets. We've seen it in Tampa when they had bad ownership. Then they get Mr. Vinnick, Jeff Vinnick, who is, you know, one of the best owners in the league. We saw it in Chicago where they had the Elder Wirtz. He ended up passing away. His son takes over. It's a completely different environment there. We've seen it in Long Island. Charles Wong, now you have different ownership. It makes everything starts at the top, and it's enough is enough as far as I'm concerned in Ottawa. But nobody up there is going to listen to me or anybody at the
league. You know, there's an article out that came out, I think it was this morning or yesterday, whatever it was, Elliot Friedman wrote it, he's a pretty reliable guy, and he was saying that, you know, paraphrasing, he's saying that Ottawa now, you know, with these moves that they've made, they're going to have a hard time getting to the salary cap floor because what high-priced, what free agent, you know, how are they attracting free agents with this group, right? And
this is what
they're going to have to overpay, you know, some a veteran guy on a one-year deal is going to make a nice chunk of change because they've got to get to the floor.
Well, and they're going to do essentially what Arizona's done. So they've taken on a lot of contracts in order to be able to get to the floor.
Start trading like for retired guys, just to get the salary cap number.
You know, and that's going to have value. You know, I read part of Elliot's piece, and
David
that's what
Clarkson
he talked about.
Be a member of
Nathan Horton, all those guys. But that does have value for those general managers. If they have contracts that they want to unload, and there are contracts around the league, you know, both for good general managers, too, that have signed some contracts. I can think of Ryan Callahan, the contract that he has in Tampa Bay, and there are others around the National Hockey League. If you're a general manager and you want to create some salary cap space, that's a team you're going to be able to unload to.
You're right. The only caveat to all that, because we all agree on the same thing, is if those players have either a no trade or a limited no trade, and Ottawa's on that list, that theory or that scenario goes out the window.
So on the flip side of that Vegas deal, I mean, Vegas brings in Stone. Obviously, this is a team that, you know, went to the Cup final in their first year. They're a playoff team again this year. How big of an impact does that make in that Western Conference, adding him to the Vegas roster?
I think it can make a significant impact. This Vegas team has needed a jolt of energy. They've needed a jolt of excitement, they're missing some passion that they had last year that we understand. We don't need to go through the litany of things that happened in Vegas, but they had that it factor, guys. They don't have it this year. Gerard Gallant, who rarely gets upset, you know, overtly, has been ticked off a couple of times at practice. George McPhee, who I spoke to a couple of weeks ago at the Beanpot, just said, we're scuffling. We're not sharp right now. We don't have it right now. This could have the nice impact. I think that could have an impact. But the other thing that really needs to change for them or get better is Marc-Andre Fleury. He's been good, but he hasn't been the same. And did he overplay last year? I mean, we, again, don't have the time to completely get into that. But we have to just wait and see if he can get back to that high level. I like the team, though. I do. I think that they could be – it's a tough place to play. The fans are unbelievable. They can make a difference. Adding a Mark Stone adds a significant top six piece. It could help. The other thing is this, and we keep saying this, the West is wide open. I mean, look, Winnipeg goes out and adds Kevin Hayes. I like that move. I don't know what you guys thought. I like that move for the number two center slot right there. Paul Maurice can mess with his lines a little bit now and get another big boy up there. But now you've also got a team in San Jose that we just saw. They looked really tired the other day, but the Bruins took it to them. They didn't look great, but, you know, I still think they're a very good team. The team that I'm really, I guess, into right now is Calgary. Except for their goaltending, which is a big question mark, I really like how they're playing right now.
How about Columbus? Very active at the trade deadline. A lot of it to do with Ottawa, obviously, but how much better did they get?
I don't know. I really don't know because, they did the all-in thing, you know, the chips, the big cojones deals. You know, they're going for it to try and keep their fans really satisfied, really energized. You know, Duchesne, to me, I don't look at him as a dominant centerman. I don't know what Bob and Judd feel about that. I think of him as a nice piece, but I don't look at him as a dominant center. But they had no centers there, RJ. They had none except for Pierre-Luc Dubois. So they were gassed down the middle. Now they get him, and that should help. Dzingel's an energy guy. He's having a career year, playing for a contract. You know, they keep Panarin. They keep Bobrovsky. The message should be good. They lose their first game. Tortorella gets ticked at them. And then they win their next one. I mean, they should be good enough, but that bottom race, the way Carolina's playing, I can't figure out Pittsburgh. I thought they'd be better than they are. But that bottom, that race for one or two teams there is pretty interesting now in the East.
You talk about a team that, I mean, whether it works or not, I don't know. But I'm just looking at Columbus right now and their draft picks for next year. They have no first rounder. They have no second rounder. They have no fourth rounder. They have no fifth rounder. They have no sixth rounder.
Oof.
They have a third round pick and a seventh round pick that they got from Calgary. I know some of it might be contingent on you know, guys resigning, whatever. But they have no picks.
They have no picks. They went on Mike Ditka when he who was the football player.
Ricky Williams deal, yeah.
Ricky Williams, yeah. They went on pretty much the Ditka formula. You know, it's interesting, Bears, you bring that up because Jarmo Kekalainen in his post-trade deadline conversation talked about, well, if it doesn't work and these players leave, because they have six players, six. They're UFAs. They got a couple of other restricted. I looked at the books yesterday. They have over $25 million in contracts coming off the books next year. It's a ton, right? So let's just play the hypothetical game. They all leave, but Jarmo was saying, well, you know, we can get some assets back. I'm like, what assets are you getting back? You're going to trade Panarin's rights to somebody? Okay, maybe you get a third-round pick back for that, you know, before the July 1 deadline or the July 1 opening of UFA. I was a little curious about that because, you know, what's Ryan Dezingle if he doesn't sign with you? Which, by the way, I think he'll sign there being an Ohio State kid. It feels like he has a good chance of staying there. But what's he going to bring you back in a pre-UFA deadline or you know, July 1 deal? I'm curious about that, too.
It's lower picks. I did look up the condition there on that first round pick for next year. So, if the pick is a top three, then it goes to 2020. They would keep that pick.
Right.
So if Ottawa gets one of the top three picks, which
if they do, then they had an epic collapse.
And Jack Hughes has a decision on his hands.
He does. Or Capo Keiko, the other one. Those two guys. Yes, they do. That's, I mean, listen, I give Kekalainen and John Davidson, I guess, credit for having the wherewithal to do what they did. I think they should be better, but I thought all year that they were going to be better than they are. But then again, their centers have been non-existent except for Pierre-Luc Dubois. The rest of them have been brutal.
Talking to Billy Jaffe from Nesson, of course, one of the names that we heard a lot leading up to the trade deadline about was he going to be dealt or, you know, where is he going to be dealt was Michael Ferland down in Carolina. They decided not to make the move and make a run. They've won four in a row coming into this weekend. They won again last night, and Evander Holyfield knocked somebody out after the game in their celebration. Bunch of jerks, yeah. They are. This is a team they're 8-2 in their last 10. They've pulled into third place in the Metro Division, although they're only a point from being potentially out of the playoffs. They've decided to go for it.
They have. You know, there was a lot of rumblings around Ferland because it doesn't feel like they're going to be able to resign him. The rumblings are there is that he's asking for at least $5.5 million a year on a 5-year deal. That's what the scuttlebutt that I've heard, and I just don't see them paying that. But they talked about their own rental, meaning keeping this guy and going for it, and we'll see where the chips fall. If they make the playoffs this year, fellas, that's a huge get for them. So if they end up losing a Ferland despite making the playoffs, they're like, well, hey, we made the playoffs, we made some great strides, and we wish them well. This team has been playing well lately. They got Jordan Staal back. He had a nice snapshot goal last night that went over St. Louis. Aho and Teravainen have both continued, especially the last, you mentioned, four wins. They have points in each of those. They're moving up, you know, they're moving up the ice quickly. They're really pushing the pace from their back end. At least to me, Judd and Beersy, it seems like their D have reached that level of what I thought they'd be, which was better than they were early on in the season. And their goaltending, I don't know how the heck they're doing it, quite honestly. I mean, McElhaney's a nice backup. He's 10-2 in his last 12. And Mrazek, who has been the ultimate hot and cold goaltender, has been good lately. So when it's all said and done, I give Rod Brind'Amour a lot of credit. They're winning with guys, again, like a Teravainen and an Aho that are bringing it. Getting Staal back brings leadership. And now they're having fun, and they've embraced the bunch of jerks thing that Don Cherry called
them. Rick Dudley made a great deal, you know, or you can credit whether it's Rick Dudley or Don Waddell, and they basically stole Nino Niederreiter.
Yes.
For Victor Rask from the Minnesota Wild, he's come in and he's given you an immediate impact. For Michael Ferland, I think the word around the league is, especially here of late, he is playing like a guy who doesn't want to get hurt and is looking for a long-term contract. He has only, I think, 3 goals over the last 10 or 11 games for the Carolina Hurricanes. And remember, this was a team that was very hard to play against before because of the speed and the tempo that they played with and how deep they were on the back end. I think what's really helped is bringing a guy like Justin Williams in, who has been the center of the leadership core that they so very lacked in Carolina for a long time, and then complementing that with some guys who can play on the interior. Ferland certainly at the beginning of the season and Niederreiter here of late, and talking to the coaching staff from Minnesota while he was there, Nino wanted to take every puck to the front of the net. And that's a good trait to have. You can't always do it, but adding that along with some of the skill that they have with Teravainen and Aho, they've seen some benefits.
They have. I watched a fair amount of that game last night. They're fun to watch. They're being aggressive. Ferland was actually forechecking really well last night, getting them out there, the line making a difference. I mean, right now, I didn't think a few weeks ago they would make the playoffs. I thought that Pittsburgh would turn it around. Pittsburgh, to me, seems like a team that's confused right now, so maybe they'll take Pittsburgh's spot.
Bunch of injuries, too, is not helping the Penguins, right? Letang, Dumoulin on the back end. I mean, that's
from the winter.
A little thin back there, anyhow.
All right, let's back to Ottawa for a minute. So Guy Boucher gets canned yesterday.
Never enough Ottawa talk.
We haven't talked about the coaching change yet, and so Guy Boucher gets fired yesterday. What's the point at this point in the season? You know, it wasn't like a day before they said they were going to wait until after the season was over, and then they turn around the next day and they fire him. But not only fire him, but they put out a job description of what it is that they're looking for. How are they going to find somebody decent to replace him?
I'll say it again. They need new ownership. Everything starts at the top. And if he's not going to sell the team, I will be shocked if they get somebody that is very competent to run it. I will. There's always a guy that wants to get back into the league. That's one thing. Or there's always a guy that's looking for the head coach job. And these guys are talented. But are they as good as other people that could be? Probably not. And how would you trust working for a guy like Pierre Dorion? Or is it Gene Melnick right now? I mean, basically, Dorion threw his coach under the bus. My opinion. I don't know if the other guys agree there. That's what I felt like. I mean, so what? He's not a good coach for you, but when you're listing up these job requirements about being able to communicate, being able to get through to certain players, to talk with, all this crap that he did, I have never seen anything like that. And while I understand that it's a new era, a new generation, I mean, it was just foolish, in my opinion, of Pierre Dorion. So I think it will severely impact certain people to go up there. They're going to look for a guy who's an up-and-coming coach, who's good with young prospects, and who will take less money to coach as well. That's all factored into it. And it's going to still be uncomfortable until they get new ownership up there.
And again, it has nothing to do with, you know, with Guy Boucher getting fired. It's more about, like, why now? You know, right? Why do you do it with this? Like, you're not turning things around to make a run at the playoffs in the last 5 weeks. You know, so it's like, let the guy finish out the season and start fresh.
And it wasn't like the guy you brought in is somebody from outside the organization. Mark Crawford was the associate coach there under Boucher. So you're basically saying, okay, we're getting rid of the head guy for the last 18 games or whatever they have left. We're bringing in the second in command. Because we want a new message, and come on, it's just dysfunctional. It's a gong show up there.
Well, they really wanted to fire Guy Boucher. They should have fired Guy Boucher at the end of the season, but the problem was they had to pay him, and they weren't going to pay him and pay another coach to come in, no matter what that coach's pedigree was.
Exactly. So it's a gong show. It's Chuck Berry up there, man. That's what it is.
All right, Billy, we appreciate the time, as always.
Barris.
Chuck Barris. Come on. Barry and Chuck Barris, very different.
Yes, that's what I thought. Yes.
Appreciate the time, right, as always, Billy.
See you later, guys.
Take care. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That's going to do it for this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. You can join Judd and Bob 6:30 tonight for the pregame, 7 o'clock faceoff, Bruins and Devils, and see if the Bruins can extend this 15-point streak. Good to see you guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, stick around for Gasper and Murray coming up next here on the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 88.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.